Hello and welcome to the Home Assistant Podcast. As usual, my name is Rohan and I'm joined with Phil. Hey, Phil.
Hey, Rohan.
And today we have our special guest, Erwin. Hey, Erwin, how's it going?
Hey, guys. How are you doing?
This episode is sponsored by Home Assistant Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local Home Assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the Home Assistant and ESP Home projects. Configuration is done by the user interface, so there's no fiddling with router settings, SSL certificates, or any YAML.
Erwin, where in the world are you?
I'm located in Belgium, in fact, and not too far away from Brussels and not too far away from Antwerp, but, you know, Belgium is not that bigger, you know.
Yeah. No, that's awesome. And obviously you're a Home Assistant user. What kind of got you into it?
First of all, thanks for the invitation also, because I'm following the podcast already for a year. I've noticed that you
appreciate it.
That the guests are always heavy users of Home Assistant, and I must say I'm a newbie because I'm only using it for 2 years.
Yeah.
So, but very much appreciated for the invitation. So, in fact, my journey started, let's say, 3 years ago, and the trigger was that I was building a new house from scratch. So, and I decided to do the electricity work myself. And the first thing was to select a home automation system. So I'm not talking about Home Assistant, but the home automation itself. And I did an evaluation between the, at that time, what was available on the market. So things like Nico Home Control, KNX, Luxono, and Velbus. And so I did an extensive evaluation of that. And I decided to go on with Velbus.
Okay.
For a couple of reasons. It's also Belgian, by the way, but that was not the reason, because and I found it out later on. So the reason was that it is a distributed system. So if you have a broken relay, it doesn't shut down your complete house. You're not out of lightning. And the second reason is that it is based on CAN bus, which is a protocol that is used in the automotive industry, right? And it's very robust in that environment. So my reasoning was, well, then it must be robust in my house, right?
Yeah.
So I went with that and with the associated product. So, and then finally, well, after 1 year when everything was ready, I had to decide between using OpenHAB, which I saw in operation from a friend. But then I came across Home Assistant at that time, 2 years ago. And, well, Home Assistant has a bigger community. It's written in Python, and I know Python quite well. So I don't know Java. So and then quickly the decision was made to go forward with Home Assistant. And but I did regret for a moment, I must say. So it's a very good product, I must say. I love it.
Yeah.
So what was the reason that you regretted it? Like, did you have in that initial switch over, you're like, oh, I should have gone OpenHAB over Home Assistant, or was there something else that you wish you would move to first before?
No. I said I didn't regret it.
You didn't regret it.
No, sorry.
Okay.
Oh, good. I was like, oh, that's interesting. You've regretted Home Assistant.
No. Sorry, I'm not a native English speaker. Sorry.
All good.
No need to apologize. Yeah.
So, no. It's an excellent product. So I didn't regret it for a moment, right?
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
So I guess this is your house. You just I love it in Europe. You know, similar to what, like, you know, I see all the time in North America. We need to do some electricity work. We'll just do it ourselves. Whereas down under here, you know, I've got to go out and get paid for a professional to touch any wiring. So it gets a bit cost prohibitive. But it's also interesting that you mentioned Velbus. I haven't heard of Velbus before. I can see there is a home assistant integration. So obviously there's people using it. But it's interesting to see that, you know, in Europe, there's, you think like how connected the world is right now. You know, we've got Zigbee, Z-Wave, that seem to be, you know, global. And then I'm assuming here Velvet's is maybe concentrated more in just Europe. I'm guessing there's also, you know, different protocols around the world as well. So is Velvet's still used in your house today?
Yes. So okay. It's operating without any glitch on its own. So it is also redundant. So the power supply. So if it one breaks, the other takes over. So it does its job in an excellent way. And also the integration towards Home Assistant is quite good. So in the beginning, I had a little bit of problems with some of my relays. And in the very first version, I had to patch it to make it work. But then the guy who maintains the GitHub library, he fixed that for me, and I think now it's taken over by someone else. But it's very, very stable.
That's good. Yeah.
So I was just looking at some of their products on their website and stuff, because as Phil mentioned, I'm kind of not familiar with Velvet's either. It looks like these guys are more like, I know you mentioned they work more in the automotive, or they more work closer with automotive protocols, right? But it looks like they have a lot of like DIN rail based stuff and things like that. What from Velvet's are you using, Erwin?
I'm using the glass control devices. So these things you put against your wall, right? So, okay. And they communicate over this green cable, EIB, it's called, I believe, to the DIN rail devices, right? So it's a big bus and you can loop it. So if one side of the bus gets disconnected, it still operates the other way around.
Yeah.
I'm using the relays for the lightning. So all my lightning is going to two central places, in fact.
Right.
And also my blinds or screens, they are connected to this Velvet's system. And then from the Velvet's itself, there is an RS-232 module, which is plugged in directly into my Raspberry Pi, right?
Right.
So, and there via the integration, it goes serial to Velvet's. And as soon as you start up the integration, you see all the entities appearing in Home Assistant. And of course, you can make use of them in the various automations or Lovelace or whatever. And then, so it's
interesting. Sounds like it's like a high-end automation system, you know, that you would see on the expensive houses. I think Rahan is another, what I'm thinking of, like Control 4. Am I thinking the right brand there? There's another one that eludes me as well.
This actually sounds a lot more industrial, right? Especially when it's wired through and it's on DIN rails and stuff like that. So it's, which I think is actually kind of cool. And are these things like super expensive, Erwin? Relative to, you know, something else, anything smart is already super expensive, but, you know, is it a premium on top of that?
It is quite expensive. So, I think I paid around 7,000 to 8,000 euros for the complete system. That was for everything. So all the relays, all the blind controls, all the glass control things, and completely in my house. So it's quite expensive, but as you say, it's more industrial. So it operates very, very stable. So
Well, and I guess it's not wireless, so you don't have to worry about.
No, it's not wireless. So
yeah,
I just had to put this green cable in my house.
Yeah,
as a bus cable through the house, and that's it.
Which I mean, if you're building it from the ground up, then that's not a huge issue typically.
No, it's not an issue. If it would have been an existing house, it's a completely different story, of course. And you cannot do the breaking in an existing house, but since I was building up from the ground, I had that freedom, right?
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Okay, so you started out with, so you've got your house, you've put your green cable everywhere, you've started that with Home Assistant. What are you using to drive Home Assistant? I know one of the contentious topics we always talk about is, you know, are you using Node-RED? Are you using the YAML? Like, is there something that you've just stuck with, or you, maybe you prefer, you know, one of the various automation engines around it? Is there something that you've sort of gelled with better in your system?
I'm a heavily user of Node-RED, so because it's very intuitive, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you can see all the automations in a visible way. So actually, to be honest, I tried immediately Node-RED and I liked it, so I didn't try the other one.
So, hey, listen, if it works for you, then that's perfect, it. Right?
Yeah.
For me, it works fine.
That's good.
Yep.
And so you've got all your physical switches and your blinds, all that control physically. Have you gone to any other sort of like smart speakers around the home to integrate with that via Home Assistant? So using like an Amazon Echo, Google Home, or even HomeKit?
I don't use voice control for the moment. That is still on my list to do, but yeah, that takes a little bit of time. So I'm integrating with the Philips Hue. I'm using this for motion detectors in my house. First of all, and also for the power switches. Is it a power switch?
Like a light switch kind of thing?
No, like or you, for you put it. It's an electrical switch, eh? So on and off.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like a smart outlet.
A power plug. I was looking for that. So,
yes.
Yeah. So I'm using that as a power plug here and there to mostly to save energy. So for instance, my son, he has a PlayStation 5. He has a PC. He has two monitors. He has a Chromecast, a TV on this room, right?
Yep.
So even if that's all these things run idle, it consumes quite some energy, and energy is expensive, you know. So I've put this power plug between all his devices and the power wall, right? And around midnight, I switch off everything until the next morning, 9 o'clock or 10 o'clock, not sure anymore.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then it's plugged on again. I mean, he gets power again. Well, if he wants to wake up four at night in the morning and he wants to do gaming, he knows the button on Home Assistant and he can activate again.
It's interesting. That's so funny. You're saving a lot of like the passive standby power
Indeed.
That devices
Indeed.
Consume.
Yep.
Which makes a lot of sense.
So, and I have a second one on my TV and my Google TV.
Yep.
And on my amplifier, so they also break. And a third one I'm using, so I have a swimming pond, I think you call it like that. So, and also there I have two pumps, so for water circulation.
Yeah.
So one of the pumps is not running at night because I have solar panels on top of my roof. And during the day, I have a lot of electricity, right? So, and they almost give you nothing for injection, but you have to pay very, very, you have to pay for if you consume energy from the grid.
Mm.
So at night, it is a pump and that is running at a low percentage, 20 or 30 watts. And then during the day, both pumps are activated or the other pump is reactivated in the morning.
Yeah.
And it at the evening, it's again stopped. So, which saves me a bit on my bill. And during the day, I have a lot of filtering. And indeed, the plants who are responsible for filtering the water, they are mostly active in the day, not at night. So at the night, and also in wintertime, I can run down the pump and the circulation of water.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome.
I know energy has been a big focus for Home Assistant recently.
Yeah.
And you mentioned, but you touched on before, you know, like you're using, you know, shutting off all those devices overnight, you know, the PS5 and the computer monitors that were just sitting there standing by. Have you managed to measure how much those idle devices were costing you in order, like, was there a reason to go, oh, they're just wasting power. I can see, you know, they're costing me X amount of dollars. Were you able to measure that, or is this just something you've done proactively to try and save some money on the devices just consuming power while they're off?
No, I did the return on investment calculation. So, okay. And so that power plug was paid back in about a year.
Wow, okay.
So
just by saving passive power. Yeah.
That is awesome.
Wow. And that was at when the energy was cheap. So now with the Ukraine crisis, the electricity in Belgium doubled, right? Electricity price doubled.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Wow, that's, yeah. Well, that's good. And have you, because you said you before you got solar panels, have you integrated your whole house energy using the new energy dashboard so that you can see how much you're consuming and how much you're generating from solar?
Yeah, that is one of my favorites, actually.
Oh, good.
And yeah, the problem is, so I have solar panels and in Belgium, so for the principle is that you take from the grid and you pay, you inject, and you get a little bit of money. So it's in our own interest that you consume energy when you have solar energy, right?
Mm.
Yeah. So the big problem was to discuss with my wife when to put on the washing machine, because she said, yeah, how can I know? And I said, yeah, I will make something that you can measure it, right? This was before the energy panel was there. So I made an integration. I'm using myself, so it's on GitHub, but I'm basically using myself. That is measuring the smart meter, that take the measurements from the smart metering and also takes the input from the solar panel. It dumps it into a database, so I can consult it later on. And I'm, in fact, calculating each 5 minutes what I call the balance. So the balance is the difference between what I inject in the grid and what I take back, right?
Right.
So if this balance is positive, you can start consuming energy, right? And I let my wife know a couple of ballpark figures. So let's say the washing machine takes 2 kW, and that device take that amount of energy, etc. So I said to her, I will make it available on Home Assistant, this balance, because it's visible as an entity. So I just use a REST API interface to what I wrote. And she can look to it. And if there is enough energy, she puts on the washing machine, right? Just at the right moment.
You're basically getting like a free washing cycle.
And you get a free washing cycle. Almost,
yeah.
Not in winter time, but starting from March, you have enough energy to feed a washing machine, and the same goes for the dishing machine, etc. And I made one extra automation for my waterbed. So my waterbed consumes a lot of energy, right? Because you need to keep it at a certain temperature, 25, 26 degrees minimum.
Right.
So in summertime, and don't do this in wintertime, but in summertime, let's say from March to end of October, I have an automation running that if the balance is more than 500 watts, I put on my waterbed, right? Because then there is enough energy to heat up my waterbed. And in the evening when the sun is gone, it simply switch off my waterbed. And it can continue for 24 hours without any problem. So the energy consumption for the waterbed is mainly done during the day when there is energy and not at night.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And that saves me a lot of money. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was going to say at night, your body will also kind of help regulate that temperature too.
Indeed.
Right?
Indeed. That's the other thing. So at night, we produce about 100 watts. So that helps a little bit indeed.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you don't feel that. Not at all, but you feel it in the bill.
Yeah, of course. I'm sure.
So how much do you think that, or not how much, but do you think that your automations have saved you enough money in energy to justify the time that you've put in to creating these automations? Like, do you think you're saving, your house is that much smarter at saving you a lot more money now?
Well, to be honest, I was doing this for fun. Eh? So not directly for the money, but you save easily. If I make the calculation, around 100 euros per year, easily save. Of course,
and for something that you're doing for fun is always a bonus, right?
It's doing for fun, and I'm also in favor of sustainability. So I like to do something back for the environment too. Mm. It's our duty, right? To do something back for that.
Because I think something that is sort of overlooked in the smart home world is the passive power that smart home devices generally take. So I know, for example, before when I was renting a house, I would have Zigbee bulbs on 24 hours a day with their radios on, right? The light bulb's not on, but the radios are physically on. Same thing, with motion sensors around my home, constantly being on 24 hours a day. But the fact that you were able to measure just before how much money you were able to save and recoup the cost of those power plugs, just by saving that passive power or the phantom energy that's being drawn every night. I think if the smart home world could focus more on that, it would definitely offset a lot of the extra power we're using just having smart devices everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. Indeed.
Well, and I think even those smart devices aren't super hungry relative to like Erwin was, you were saying, like your amplifier or something like that, right? Which typically would use a little more, but
yeah, it's always on standby, but nevertheless, and it's only a couple of watts, but if you calculate for a couple of watts during a year, it's a lot of watts,
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you generate enough energy from your solar panels to justify a battery, or have you already got a battery to store some of the energy, the excess energy that you've got?
I don't have it for the moment. I'm still recording the data, right? That's why I'm recording the data in the database. So I have to make the calculations. It's too early for that.
I like that you're going to the level of recording the data first and then calculating it. I feel as though, from my perspective, I would, I need that. I don't go to the level of, what am I physically going to say? I just go, yep, looks like a good idea, I'll do it, right? But you've actually gone, no, I'm going to take the data down and work out how much I'm going to save and then justify it that way, which I think is fantastic. And you're doing it all in Home Assistant as well, which is even better.
Indeed, and that application I wrote, I also use it to feed the energy dashboard.
Right. Interesting.
Yeah, because my meter is connected to that, and it cannot be connected to a third party integration at the same time and my application. So, but that's fine. That works perfect. So it was not that difficult to write an integration.
I can see here from the original email you sent us, you've actually written a few things, and we're going to put links to all these in the show notes as well, because it's some fantastic things. But I do want to touch on one that you've got here, which is the video analytics system, which you call Concierge. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure, I can. So this started a bit as, in my previous job. So I worked for, I'm still working for Nokia, by the way. Mm-hmm. So at the time, 6 years ago, we were creating IPTV systems. I got a bit my experience from that project, where I had to write here and there an application, a web application, in the video space. And then in 2020, Corona came by, and there was a little bit time to experiment. So I started, I started buying some cameras, and I just selected Home Assistant. So to be honest, the camera selection was also based a bit on what the community of Home Assistant reported to me, right?
Sure.
And I concluded that Reolink was a good choice to integrate with Home Assistant. Mm. So I made that selection. And I wanted to have a network recording on top of that, because there is an SD card inside my camera. But I like to have things double. I mean, clips double. So I used a Raspberry Pi 4 to do the recording based on motion. So not all the time. So when there is motion around my house, it does the recording.
Hey, everyone. I just wanted to take a minute to talk about the Eufy Video Lock. It's a smart lock that's really easy to set up with just a Phillips screwdriver and no extra drilling. It's got a keyless entry, so you don't need to worry about fumbling with the keys when your hands are full. Also, you don't need to worry about handing out extra keys when you're in a pinch, your kids losing them, or people copying the key and passing it around to each other. Something else I like about the Eufy Video Lock is that it has a camera built in and it works as a doorbell as well. Personally, I think the Eufy Video Lock is great for apartments or cottages where you can't necessarily add extra holes for a video doorbell. My favorite part about it, though, is that there isn't a monthly fee and your recordings are locally stored, so you don't have to worry about someone else owning your doorbell data. You can find it on Amazon, or if you want to know more, search Eufy Video Lock, that's E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
And then I said, yeah, why not extend it with detecting persons around the house and making my alarm system, I didn't have one at the time, to make it a bit richer. Huh?
Interesting.
So then I start looking at... At the time, nowadays we have several of these things that you can use, like DeepStack, like Dudes, like Fregit. They're all available. And I just compared them already with what I have. But I have some, I will come back to that. I have some reasons not to switch to the other one. So I started then a microservice development because I was experimenting with Docker, etc. So let me experiment with that. Then I came across a library which is called YOLO. You only look once.
Huh? I like it.
Yeah. Which is it's available on the GitHub, so you can download it. And actually, that does the job of detecting objects. In images. So then I went a step further. So, and I made a bit my own video management system by writing small applications to configure automatically my cameras.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as the recording is there, then the analysis of the images starts, right? Looking for persons. So, and if a person is found, it is put in a kind of list. Of images, which you can consult. And then I also REST API if a person is detected or if an object in general is detected, depending on what you want to detect.
Right.
And in fact, I must say that works pretty well because the thing is, how do you test this? So that's not that easy because that's a story about the false positives and the false negatives, right?
Mm-hmm.
So actually, I tested this when I was on vacation, right? So I put this in operation and I made a small automation if someone is detected around my house because my family or nor I was over there, send me or push me a notification on my phone via push bullet, for instance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I knew that someone was coming around a couple of days. So I abused a bit the fact that he was coming around to check that I was only notified when this person was coming around and that I was not notified otherwise, right? Unless someone was breaking in, you know?
Yeah.
And, well, I didn't get any false alarm. So I must say this YOLO library, that works fine, right? So it does really a job. So then I was wondering, can I switch to one of the other platforms? Because I'm with my concierge, I'm alone for the moment.
Yeah.
So I was wondering, why not switch to Fregit or Dudes, right?
Yeah, that way you don't have to maintain your code. Someone else is maintaining it.
Maybe I can contribute to that because I have some experience, right?
Yeah.
But for Fregit and Dudes, this approach I don't like. Because in that case, you have to analyze the images all the time. And that's not what I want to do. It feels a little bit like having a dog, right, to warn you if someone is around the house. But at the same time, you're sitting next to the dog and you're looking also, is someone not there? So I don't like this approach. So I like the approach I have now. I have a dog. Only when he barks, I start analyzing. Otherwise, I don't look, right? So Fridge and Dudes is for me an overkill, right? I don't want to sacrifice silicon or energy on that processing all the time images.
Yeah.
Then I'm left with DeepStack, right? So which does the trick on demand. Yeah? So based on motion. So this is something what I have. But then with DeepStack, when I looked, you need dedicated hardware. So, and I didn't want to switch hardware.
Yeah.
So for the moment, I'm still using my own implementation, with this, which is not real time. It's nearly real time because there is a little bit of delay. It is not minutes, but you can speak about 30 to 40 minutes. Seconds, which is acceptable, I think, right? It's not a problem for me. And also, my system is adaptive. So if there is a lot of motion around my house, right, you have to process a lot of images, then it's adaptive. It will skip some images so that the Raspberry Pi 4 is not overloaded with image processing.
So you're running all this through a Raspberry Pi 4?
I'm running all this through a Raspberry Pi 4. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And it hasn't, it's able to keep up. Obviously, like you said, it is adaptive and stuff. It's adaptive, like that, but it's able to keep up.
Yeah, it's able to keep up with 4 cameras. Yeah. So I will install now a 15 in my garden. But I think it will still keep up with the pace of...
Wow, okay. That's pretty impressive, actually.
And currently, I'm running an automation. I'm working on it. So if I'm away, the fact that I'm away, I'm indicating in the alarm panel, right? I'm on vacation or I'm away. So in that case, if a person is detected, I will switch on my my Google TV. I will switch on my amplifier. I will switch on my TV. So you get an image from my Google TV. And I'm streaming, in fact, the image of the person that is detected to my TV. So then when someone is sneaking around my house, he sees his own image, which will scare him off, hopefully, right?
Yeah.
I was hoping when you were starting this, I was like, okay, he's going to turn the sprinklers on. He's going to lock him in the shed or something.
That's an idea.
Right. That's funny. You got, it's like a movie. You got those like automated guns coming down, just pointing it at people.
So when you first emailed us quite a while ago, you said that you were in the planning conception stage of an enhanced integrated alarm management. Is this what it's come to? Like, is this what, since you've emailed us, is this what it is now?
That's exactly
where you've gone.
Yeah, that's exactly that. Yes. Yeah.
That's great.
So if you have some other ideas, please, they're welcome. Huh?
Well, like you can take the irrigation system and the garden shed, locking them in there. That's
one right. That's right. Smart lock and smart sprinklers, put them together with your cameras.
So are you using, you're obviously using presence detection. I'm guessing you've got your phone as a beacon to say whether you're home or not. Are you using any like alarm control panel systems in Home Assistant?
Yeah, so I'm like
set status.
I'm using this. What is it? Is it a standard alarm panel? So the think it's standard. Huh? For you can put in the configuration.yaml. That's what I'm using.
Yeah.
Yep.
With presence detection, I'm struggling, to be honest, and I don't have a good solution for that. So, well, let me rephrase that a bit. For putting off my alarm, for disabling my alarm, it's fine. If I see one phone, I can disable it. But I'm hesitating for enabling it because I'm still using the old ping ping the phone of myself, my wife, and my son and daughter. But yeah, you have the problem of an iPhone with my son, so that is not always pingable.
Yep.
And my daughter, well, she doesn't charge her her phone, so it's worthless. Huh?
That's funny.
It's funny. I'm actually going through like the exact same issue right now. So I'm Android. Everything's easy for me, right? I can just, my phone's on the Wi-Fi. I'm home. My wife, who has an iPhone, sometimes has her Wi-Fi off because I'm apparently always taking up too much internet and slowing things down. So she just turns her Wi-Fi off. Or the iPhone, I think, randomizes its MAC address or whatever, and you just can't detect which device is on the network. For whatever reason, it's hides itself.
Oh, does it? I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah, there is a setting that you can disable somewhere in the settings, mm-hmm. but I don't want to have to go through her phone and set those things up. So I am currently toying with Bayesian sensors for my wife. So trying to work out, you know, I've got a couple of tile Bluetooth trackers. You know, then work out some rules if the car's away, her wallet, the tile tracker in her wallet is also away, then there's a good mm-hmm. probability that she's not home. I'm just trying to come up with rules that, you know, can get a 99% accuracy. You know, unfortunately, there's we've just installed a smart door lock on our front door, so we don't have to carry keys around with us. But then that now has the negative effect of, because we're not carrying keys with us, the trackers that are on our keys don't leave the house, so the house will think we're home.
Right.
So, there's a whole bunch of rules that, I'm trying to figure out the best way for. I understand the struggle.
Yeah, I'm interested in that solution, if you find the ideal solution.
there's that, which is why Phil and I like talking about presence so much, right? Like it's because it's hard.
Yep.
Right. Yep. Is everybody's got, you know, their own little magic sauce that they do and it works for them. I don't think there is a perfect just yet. Unless you have some kind of a GPS chip implanted in yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Other than that, I think, you know, to that point, I think, you know, it's everybody we've seen is some combination of like, you know, hey, I use the Home Assistant app with, you know, as well as, you know, tracking my car or tracking, you know, whatever, like a couple of different things, right? And some people use Bayesian sensors, some people don't, right? Like, I think for me personally, I've gotten to the point where I'm just using our, so both of us have iPhones, so we're both just using the iOS, Home Assistant app for integration, and with it telling us, you know, are we home, are we not, whatever. Again, for me, that works really well, actually, because both of us always have our phones on us. But again, like you said, for somebody like your daughter who doesn't necessarily have her phone charge or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. So then that's where it starts breaking down, right? So and if she doesn't drive, you're not gonna, you know, put a tracker in the car or something like that, right? Like, so, you know, or she might not have her own car, right? So those are things you gotta consider as well, right? So
I also am currently toying that you mentioned before. You know, when to turn the alarm on is the tricky part as well. I think is also I've currently resorted to, I used to do it basically, you know, once all the presence detectors were detected as not home, activate, you know, set the home in away mode, it would turn everything off. Mm-hmm. But now, you know, with presence not being as reliable as I'd like at the moment, and also being in a position where, you know, we may leave someone in the house while me and my wife step away and then everything turning off while they're still in the house, it gets tricky. I've currently set up a push notification to my phone that will just prompt me, you know, do you want to turn the alarm on? It looks like no one's home. But yeah, I think disabling it is easy. Activating the alarm to say that you've left the house can be a bit tricky.
And what do you use for this push notification?
Just the Home Assistant app. So I've got, you know, Nabucasa as a cloud.
Okay.
Yeah. And then, there's just a standard companion app. And then it gives me in the notification, there's a yes, turn on, or no, don't turn on the alarm
right
button that I can press.
Yeah.
And if you want to go a little bit further, if you are using Home Assistant as the like default alarm control panel, I found, someone was on the podcast that was telling us about it. Alarmo is a community mm-hmm. add-on. It's really cool. It basically allows you to have zones in your home. You can set different PIN codes that can arm and disarm the alarm panel from within Home Assistant. yeah, there's a whole bunch of sensors that you can add in, and it will then group those sensors together and give you more rules around when an alarm is triggered. I've been having a lot of fun with that, so I highly recommend that little add-on as well.
Yep. I can always use these glass controls from Velbus to activate it. So it works in the other way around. So you can push the button on Velbus.
Yeah. Okay.
And that is injected as a signal into it's simply a sensor, right?
Yeah.
And based on that, I can also activate it. So
you can have like a button near your front door, you know, so when you're leaving, just push the button.
Yeah, it's my light switcher. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Interesting.
Can it even do like, can the Velbus system detect things like double taps or something like that? So even if you have like a light switch that's at your doors, mm-hmm. so, you know, once off, one press once for, you know, turn off the light, or press three times for like, hey, like I'm leaving the house, and, you know, shut everything down and run your like goodbye routine kind of thing. And then also set the alarm on and do whatever.
It can. Because it does that locally. Yeah? So I have that for one of my rooms where I store things. Yeah? So if you tap once, it goes, the light goes on for 5 minutes. If you double tap, it will or tap long enough for a second or two, it will stay on for 1 hour. Yeah?
Right.
So it can definitely do that.
Yeah, yeah. So that might a lot of times, going back to your basics is kind of the best thing, right? Like even like, hey, the entire family is leaving the house. Great. Well, here's, you know, whatever, double tap, triple tap, whatever, right? Set the house to away. So the house knows that everybody is gone. And then based on that, you do whatever else until it detects one of you back for like a minute or something like
indeed.
That, right?
Yeah. Yep.
So...
That's interesting. So you mentioned before you've got kids around the house as well. How are they like? How are they using the smart home? Have you got them, you know, telling them to do double taps on buttons and all that? And how we've done anything custom that they've, you know, feature request that they've said, hey, I wish the house could do this, and you've sort of built that out for them?
Well, that was one thing for the remote control for my amplifier. It broke and I cannot find a replacement.
Yeah.
So they are forced to use it to put it on, right? So that is one thing. And the other thing is the go to sleep button. That's what they ask.
Nice.
Yeah. So push the button, every light goes out, the TV goes out, the amplifier shuts down. And I activate the power plugs. I mean, I deactivate the power plugs, right?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. So other than that, no, not really. But my wife is using the energy panel. So even in the evening, she checks, did I do well, right?
which is awesome. I mean, again, especially because you guys do make decisions based on that too, right? Should I run the wash right now? Should I wait a little bit? Should I...
Yep.
You know, whatever that looks like, right? So, mm-hmm. which is nice. And to your earlier point, it's always good to be conservative too, right? Or from an energy savings perspective and stuff. So,
yep.
Which is
also
really nice.
Like the energy dashboard can give you like real time price on how much you've spent as well. If you put in the cost of energy as a sensor in Home Assistant, the dashboard will just say, okay, you spent, you know, $3 today.
Yep.
And then that way it becomes an actual financial goal as well.
Yeah, true. Becomes really visible. You saved that amount of money that day or that month. Correct. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Until you realize, I don't know how it is for you guys, Erwin and Phil, like but there's all of these like extra fees and stuff like that that you don't take into account too, right? On top of all of those standard fees. But yeah, like it's definitely really useful. So I'm looking to getting into the energy monitoring thing and everything myself too, right? So it's nice to see, you know, successes from folks like yourself, Erwin.
Yeah, there is one drawback in the energy panel that is the I've noticed.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a problem with my Raspberry Pi 3. So I started the installation 2 years ago on the Raspberry Pi 3. And after that many weeks, I found out that it blocked completely. But even the mm-hmm. device was not reachable anymore, so I could not do an SSH session to the device. So it was completely blocked, including the network. So that was really annoying. And I thought it was due to the installation I used at that time. It was some Docker-based installation I found on the internet, and I tried that, and it worked, etc. So I said to myself, well, let me switch to the we have now backup, huh? And we can do restore. So let me reinstall it completely with the standard installation, the basic installation. Mm-hmm. And then I noticed, in fact, two things. So the first thing is that I still have the same problem, so it's still blocked for some reason. And the second problem is that the data from the energy panel is not restored.
Hmm.
I'm not sure that is normal, but I thought that would have been restored, but it's not the case.
Interesting. So you lost a lot of...
Yeah, I have still have my own database, right, where I log things, but it's annoying.
Yeah. Do you log these into like Grafana or anything like that, Erwin?
I use a combination of InfluxDB, which is a time series database. And for the visualization, I use indeed Grafana to have a look at the data. But it really goes deeper because it's every 5 minutes or all the data of the solar panels, what I get is pumped into mm-hmm. that database. Also the forecasts. So I have also forecasting on solar. Yeah. So also these data is pumped into the database just to see after a while what correction I have to do because these are not that accurate. Right, but there is a kind of correction factor I can do to make them more accurate.
Interesting. Yeah. And then are you planning to do any kind of like modeling or anything like that? Just say like, hey, you know what? I think based on what you know, my typical what's the word I'm looking for? Collection is right for mm-hmm. from harvesting whatever you want to call it for solar. Based on that, you know, tomorrow's weather is going to be X, Y, Z, so it's going to look like this. Like, is there any?
I think in the future I can do that, but on the condition that all the devices in the house become much, much smarter, and can be. I mean, I cannot steer my washing machine. I don't think that's possible to do it remotely.
Yeah.
Same for the dishing machine, but But I'm thinking about the electrical car. So in that case, I can make it indeed more smart, right? And based on there is tomorrow or the day after more solar energy, so I will not charge my electrical car because I can still drive for 1 or 2 days. I will postpone that.
Mm.
Yeah.
So yes.
Raham, what you were just describing before, there is the forecast solar sensor in Home Assistant as well. Yeah. So if you activate that, that'll give you sort of like a rough estimate on how good solar production is expected to be over the next few days. Similar to like a weather sensor, right?
Yeah.
So there's another option too.
Yep.
Yeah, which is kind of cool. I'd love to have solar here, but I mean, looking outside right now, it looks really dull, so I don't think I'd get much results. So I don't know, maybe not.
And finally, I fixed my problem with the... because I still had a problem with the Raspberry Pi 3.
Mm-hmm.
So I fixed it. I had to fix it by buying a Raspberry Pi 4. And then the problem was gone. And I'm using now the Raspberry Pi 3 as a second device to do the smart meter, the electricity meter, to record everything, to do the InfluxDB, the Grafana. I'm doing it on that device, first of all.
Yeah.
And then the other problem I had was remote access. So what I didn't want to do is to switch Home Assistant to HTTPS.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you switch to HTTPS, my son complained because he has an iPhone and I need a certificate. So in that case, with a self-signed certificate, an iPhone doesn't accept it. So I have to produce, or I have to buy one, or I have to produce again, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, you could do something like a Let's Encrypt certificate or something like that, right? Which is automatically, you can get it to auto-generate every, whatever, 90 days or 60 days or whatever that is.
Yeah.
and then do that. But
I don't want to do it on my land. Yeah. I don't want to do it.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you for that one.
And the second reason, the other reason is that I cannot stream my cameras anymore to my Home Assistant.
Because they use HTTP.
They use HTTP. I cannot do it with HTTPS. So
interesting, actually. Yeah. That seems like, doesn't sound right. There should be some way. I'm sure it's an extremely complex way of doing it, but it sounds like that should work, though. Because is it,
because if you're thinking of it, like, so if you're accessing a HTTPS site and then you're trying to stream a non-HTTPS feed on that page, it will block the non-secure content.
Right, from the frame there, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, that would need your camera to flip to
HTTPS.
But it's a low I mean. Budget camera, so.
So it's not going to.
No, I'm not going to do that.
Fair.
No.
Would you recommend the Raylink cameras that you've got?
Definitely.
Like, do you think?
Definitely. Yeah. They're very good. They're very cheap.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they cost, what is it, 50 euros a piece.
Yeah. Yep.
But having this concierge system, they're already paid back because I got 2 months ago a fine from the police that I ignored the traffic light in Antwerp, right?
Okay.
But in Belgium, the government is very, very slow, right? And you get the fine 1 month later. So one month later, you think, did I do this? I don't think I did it, but where was I? Luckily, I still have the camera feeds, right? I still had some still images. So I could see my car parked on the driveway half an hour before the incident.
Right.
And half an hour after the incident on exactly the same spot. So I said to the police, hey, look, this is my car on my driveway. I cannot be the committer of the offender, right?
Yeah.
And this is the proof. And then they said, yeah, you're right. Okay, you don't have to pay the fine, which was around 200 euros. So.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah. That's great.
Wow.
So it saved me some money already.
Of course.
Is your license plate visible in the still images that you took? Or like, was it a side-on view of your car? Like, how would the police know, oh, I just sent a photo of a car in a driveway? Like, could be anyone's car.
True, but it was, it is my driveway. I mean,
yeah.
Indeed, yeah. The license plate was not completely, there was maybe one letter visible.
Okay. But that, well, that's good. Well, then the cameras pay for himself.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah.
Wow.
That's awesome.
Although a bit concerning that they issued the fine in the first place. Yeah, an error or vehicle. Someone cloned your license plate. Is running around.
I guess so. So, yeah.
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 That's, I like, crazy. Those good stories, though. Like, you know, that you were able to use Home Assistant to save yourself a fine that you didn't commit, like, and there was your proof.
Yep.
Fantastic.
Yeah. But I know you also mentioned in your email you were doing some water detection as well, using Arduino sensors that I assume you built yourself. Want to talk about that one for a second? Because I just, that's kind of stuff I'm interested in too. So I just genuinely just want to know.
Yeah. I'm planning to do that on the Arduino, the water sensors. So, and actually, there are still have also problems. So, I have two collectors of water on my house. So, one for the rainwater, that collects the rainwater, and that goes then to the garden and to the for flushing the toilet, right?
Okay.
And there is a sensor in it to measure. In fact, it's a very dumb sensor. To measure low water, right? So it's a float, right, on the surface. Okay. And if it goes into a vertical position, it gives an alarm into Velbus and obviously in Home Assistant. And that will send me a push notification. And then I have a second collector where the water is collected from rooms which are below ground surface, right?
So, okay.
Where I have a bathroom. Obviously, if I want to drain that water, it goes to a collector and then there is a pump that pumps it to the higher level and to drain it to the street. Right. There is also a float inside it, but it's the opposite, right? If that goes above a certain level, then I risk a float of my my bathroom, of course. Yeah.
Right.
If the pump is broke for some reason or there is no electricity on the pump itself. So that's a second detection. Now, these floats are not really reliable because they break, already broke too.
Oh, wow. Like the actual like stem or whatever, the floating the part
float,
of the float.
The float didn't work anymore.
Oh, no.
So for the, what was it called? Cistern, for the water collection thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine now because you're running out of water. I'm okay with that. But for the other one, it's a disaster, right?
Yeah.
So actually, I'm looking for the detector, a second detector.
Interesting.
So, and for the rainwater collector, I would like to measure the height or the depth, I must say, just to see how many water is remaining.
I wonder how, are you able to use something like a, and again, this is where my knowledge of these kind of things start to wither, but if you use something like an ultrasound sensor or something like that, and again, I'm not sure how you're catching this water, but whatever vessel it's being stored in, can you use like an ultrasound sensor and see the level that way? I don't know if that works or not, but I'm
that definitely works on Arduino because my kid in school tried a project to measure distance with an Arduino.
Yeah,
but. Yeah, to be honest, I'm not sure that will work in the hostile environment of a collector where there is everything becomes wetter in that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So I'm not sure. Maybe it's an option.
Actually, I'd love, you know, maybe this is a good chance for, you know, some of our listeners if you're you know doing that kind of thing.
I would definitely be interested.
So,
I've got a rainwater tank, and I would love to know how much capacity it's got in it, right? So just to be able to see that in home, is, you know, 100% full, 0% full. Mm-hmm. I've definitely seen the ultrasonic sensors or ultrasound sensors that you were talking about, Rohan. Like, that's like one of the basic Arduino projects out there, right? Like, there's a million guides on how to do those. But yeah, if there's another more solid solution that's more weatherproof, I guess, yeah. Love to hear it.
Yeah. Oh, there might be a project with ESP Home or something like that.
Definitely. Yeah, something right?
That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah. But this is certainly something I want to explore further in the future. And indeed.
Yeah. So if anyone out there knows anything, feel free to shoot us an email and we can definitely pass it on to Erwin.
Yeah.
Well, Erwin, thank you very much for taking the time to talk to us today. We're going to leave links to all those GitHub repos that you've created and shared. Also, thank you for doing that, making it open source and sharing them around. We'll leave links in the show notes. So, Erwin, thank you very much. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
Cheers.
Bye.
If you want to share your Home Assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on hasspodcast.io.